Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD products curated for life. We are live here at Hawkins Field on Vanderbilt's campus. They will kick off their college basketball season tonight over Memorial Gym. They will host Kentucky Saturday night, right to our left at Dudley Field. But right now, you know the music. Starting at 2 o'clock every day, you can listen to Paul Feinbaum's show on 94.9. And Paul is brought to you every week on our show by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Paul, good morning. How you doing?
Everything is great, guys. Good morning.
It wasn't great for Gary Barta last night trying to explain how in the hell Michigan is in front of Michigan State when they just played each other and one team beat the other.
Yeah, it reminds me of some of the punditry about the recent elections. You know, forget what we see in front of us. Just this is how we feel about it. We could all agree here that Michigan's probably a better football team than Michigan State. But that's not what happened in the game, and my biggest problem with the committee, yeah, the Oregon Ohio State game is a little different. That was week two. A lot's happened in 8 weeks. Teams change, personnel changes, but nothing has happened since Michigan and Michigan State played, other than the Michigan State in a predictable hangover went out and lost, and Michigan won. But the head to head was still obvious, and they're sending a very bizarre signal. On one hand, they're ranking Oregon ahead of Ohio State. I don't think most football power index experts believe that is true. And then they're coming right back and saying, you know, we think Michigan is better than Michigan State, even though Michigan State won the game. Now, having said all that, guys, I'll sound like a broken record. It really won't matter because Michigan State plays Ohio State next week. Michigan plays Penn State this week and plays Ohio State in 2 weeks. But from a credibility standpoint, it is ridiculous when you make these claims with a straight face.
Yeah. Do you think there's a chance the Big Ten cannibalizes itself, or do you see someone as the clear-cut winner and is going to slide into that top four spot or stay in the top
spot? I think Ohio State's the best team, but you know they have a difficult road, and I think it's entirely possible – not likely, but possible that Michigan could beat them in a one-game playoff, and then there's still a championship game after that with whoever wants to be the sacrificial lamb from the other side. But I think ultimately they'll probably survive. The Big Ten is on center stage right now. It's a good league. You can say whatever you want, but it's pretty deep when you think about what Purdue has done. The fact that Iowa once was the number two team in the country. Nebraska is the best team in the country I've ever seen for losing one possession games. I've never seen anything quite like it. And ultimately, I think they'll probably survive.
You know, when you brought that up about Ohio State, and you're right, on paper, just, you know, what we know about their recruiting and, you know, Ryan Day and their system and their offense, sure, they're impressive. They are more talented than most anybody they're going to ever face. So they're the more talented team. But, gosh, I still watch them. And I'll use the NFL comparison that we keep bringing up every week when we do our NFL top 10 rankings, Paul. You know, Buffalo, I get it. On paper, they look really good. And you know, they've been really good here in this, like, three-year window. But I watch them every week, and I feel like every week I become less and less impressed with them. And I kind of feel that way about the entire country outside of Georgia. I feel like every week there's really no juggernaut other than Georgia. I think anybody can lose.
Yeah,
do you agree or disagree?
On Alabama right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they came within a whisker of losing to Florida, which now has five losses.
Yep.
Let's be honest, they should have lost to LSU. And that would have been, you know, statistically one of the most monumental upsets we've ever seen. But, you know, they survived because, you know, I think Ed O was too busy trying to be a cheerleader during the game as opposed to a head coach. And ultimately, there is great separation. And having said all that, you know, I do a show every day, as you guys know. We're fans obsessed about everything that's wrong. And even Georgia fans are finding fault with their team, and they're still the best team in the country. That's just the way we are.
Wow. That's interesting. They're finding – I mean, I just don't – I think Kirby Smart's in a weird spot because they are expected to do nothing other than just run the table and finish. I mean, when that is your expectations as we sit here in mid-November, like, you have to run the table, you have to finish this thing off, and you have to be crowned national champs. Whew! If that is your expectations, then anything less is a failure. I mean, I know that's ultimately where you want to be, but, man, that's – I don't know. That probably has some sleepless nights for Kirby Smart, I would think, moving forward the rest of the way.
He has now taken the Nick Saban mantle as the scoreless winner because there's really nothing – there's nothing he can – you know, he's got a quarterback conundrum. This week will be, I think, one of the most interesting Saturdays of the year for Georgia because they're playing a team that is really hard to describe in Tennessee. Let's give Jeremy Pruitt one last pat on the back before we kick him in the gutter and stomp his face and break his head. But he did bring Hendon Hooker over, and without him, I don't know where Tennessee would be right now. I mean, they're in a really interesting game Saturday in Knoxville. And it's because of one player, primarily.
Yeah, I mean, what they did in Lexington, and Kentucky will be here where we are on Saturday night, and now Kentucky. I know early on we were talking about Kentucky, and then now they've dropped three in a row. But what they did in Lexington on Saturday, when the time of possession was 44 minutes to 16, they converted three third downs, and Kentucky ran 99 plays on offense, and Tennessee still won the game and scored 45 points. That is unbelievable to me.
Yeah, it seems like maybe the karma came back on their side. They probably should have won the Ole Miss game. They let that one get away. They let the Pittsburgh game get away. And so this was really – I was really happy to see that for them. I'll leave Kentucky's conversation elsewhere. They really just don't matter anymore. But Josh Heupel has done a phenomenal job of just stringing this thing together with duct tape, and that's really what he's done.
Couldn't agree more. I think the interesting team in all of this is Oklahoma, right? Because they truly can, when you say controlling your own destiny, and they probably haven't felt that way because they've been on the way outside looking in basically this entire time of the rankings. But they truly have the ability to be in that Final Four because their strength of schedule the rest of the way is going to be by far better than anybody else's.
Yeah, I think the committee, if I could give them a little credit, I mean, they're playing games with us right now about Oklahoma. Oklahoma has so many opportunities left, and if they went out, there's not even a doubt. They have the toughest road ahead. And they're a much better team than they were. This was not it's bizarre, but they really weren't a good team with Spencer Rattler. They are a high-level team right now. I think they're one of the top four teams in the country.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum, the SEC Network, ESPN. Okay, so let's have the Kentucky conversation then, Paul, because losing the three straight, they should win this weekend at Vanderbilt. But, we've talked with you about Stoops and possibly – a bigger job for him and his stock. I mean, how much has the last three games damaged that, or has it?
It has. He's still a very good coach, and I've never believed you should hire a coach on whether he wins a game or not on a given weekend. You either think he can turn your program around, and I think he's a good. I think he can do that, but. This is such a reflection on Kentucky, though, because this is now the second time in a couple of seasons that they were the talk of the country, and then they just completely imploded. And when they had that run in, I think it was 18, they came right back and lost to Tennessee. They did it again, and I know they have a lot of injury. Everybody has injuries by the 11th week of the season, and it's just a it's a bad look. I still think Stoops has done just about all he can do, though. I think this is more if he gets an offer, I believe he will take it, as opposed to saying, I'm gonna stick around and try to mine the state of Ohio for a couple more linemen and maybe grab somebody in the portal. Because I think at this point you just have to realize it's not getting any better at Kentucky.
So a couple of games to look at this weekend. Texas A&M and Ole Miss might be one of the more intriguing ones besides Tennessee-Georgia. But, you know, both of them have two losses right there together in the rankings. I kind of like Ole Miss at home, even though they're the underdog. But how do you view this one?
Yeah, I'm probably leaning the other way. Maybe I just spent last weekend in Aggie land, and man, when you go out there, I mean, you feel like you're ready to suit up and play. They have a really good team, but I just worry about Matt Corral. I think he's so banged up right now. He's very limited. They don't have a lot of weapons, and I just feel like their time is about to run out.
So South Carolina coming off a huge win against Florida, and it's huge because it was ugly. It was just a blowout, and they're going to play Missouri. Nobody really cares about that game, but what does this mean for Dan Mullen? I mean, because there's been so much shine on him, and he comes to Florida, and you think national championship contenders, and it hasn't been that way, and then this year is just, let's call it what it is, a disaster. He's making staff changes already. What does this look like moving forward?
Well, I'll give you the take as of today. I mean, the betting line is he'll survive. But, yeah, if he does, and I still think other things could happen the rest of the way, you know, he's on the hottest seat in the country next year. And that's just the fact that we're even talking about this is pretty remarkable. You know, I'll never forget walking out of Gainesville, 2 months ago, and that was the best loss I've ever seen when Alabama, you know, held on to beat them. And, you know, he has been a fair-haired coach, but the shine's off. And I understood the Todd Grantham decision. That was just that was a Twitter play there. Okay, I'm gonna. You guys have been asking for Grantham. I'll give it to you. But the other guy, which is really his, he's the offensive line coach. But a guy that's been with him for his entire career, that one blew me away, because I don't know what you gain by sacrificing your offensive line coach with three games remaining. You're the offensive coordinator. You work in tandem with this guy. It just seemed desperate. It reeked of a crass desire to fade the heat. And I would still watch this story. I know I'm kind of rambling here, but, you know, should they lose to Florida State or Missouri, I do think that will do him in.
Mm, really? Wow. Are you surprised with, you know, as good of a coach as he's been at, you know, Mississippi State and even at times at Florida, that he can't figure out? I mean, Trask was okay, but he can't figure out the quarterback position?
And, you know, one thing about, I mean, Dan Mullen gets in Dan Mullen's way. He's got an attitude, which helps make him a really good offensive coordinator, but it makes him a terrible recruiter. And I think the worst combination for him is, you know, let's say he loses another game, and he could lose to Florida State. I don't think that's inconceivable. You know, and then he would literally be, you know, do we keep him or do we not? And secondly, on top of that, if Georgia wins the national championship, I mean, that's their biggest rival. And, you know, if you look around the SEC, it looks like, you know, doesn't look like it. Tennessee is getting better. South Carolina's a little bit better. Missouri went backwards this year. Kentucky's exactly where Kentucky always is. And, you know, where are you right now? And, you know, the recruiting rankings are his biggest enemy. And I think he's, yeah, and everyone says, oh, well, he and Scott Strickland are great friends. Well, guys, if Scott Strickland sticks with him and it doesn't work, Scott Strickland then is endangering his own future as the athletic director. And I don't know any athletic director other than Philip Fulmer, who a year ago mortgaging his career on Jeremy Pruitt, who would make a move like that.
So we obviously don't know how this is going to end with the last three games, but do you think that when this is all said and done, that it's going to be a situation where Dan Mullen was great at a job like Mississippi State, he fits in a place like that, but the Florida job was just simply too big for him?
Yes, I do. The Florida job right now is almost been too big for everyone but Steve Spurrier and Urban Meyer. When you think about the failures that they have had there, I mean, in succession, after Urban, you had Will Muschamp, Jim McElwain, and now Dan Mullen, and it's possible that none of these guys work out. So, you know, is it bigger than the head coach? And the only solace for Dan Mullen is that the two guys that turned the job down before him, Chip Kelly and Scott Frost, are both doing worse than he is.
Hmm. Good stuff. And I said early, Monday's show, I feel like he's now suffering the Auburn syndrome. You know, he's because of Georgia, and you said it, their rivalry and Kirby Smart's success. It's kind of like what Auburn goes through every year. They, you know, like we, the Alabama syndrome, and now I feel like it's fallen into the lap at Florida because they're like, what? Why are we taking a backseat to Georgia every year now? At least that's just my two cents. I don't know if that's
no.
Really
that, by the way, that rivalry is very deep. So
yep,
that is now the story in the SEC. I mean, Ed Ogeron, that was seemed like a year ago that he got fired.
Yeah, no doubt. Paul, appreciate the chat as always. Have a great rest of your week and a good show today, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Good stuff from Paul. We'll come back, continue the discussion on the other side. We're live at Hawkins Field on the campus of Vanderbilt. We will have the AD stop by to begin the second hour of the program. Yes, Candace Story Lee. We're looking forward to talking with her. We'll also check in with Willie in Dallas at some point in the second hour, and a lot more coming as we sit here on this Wednesday. We'll hear from Mike Vrabel in the third hour. We'll also get a little preview on their next opponent, the Saints, in the third hour from their play-by-play guy. And then we'll just keep this thing rolling until 2 o'clock.
Got Mace.
Chris Mason from Dallas at 1 o'clock. A lot going on today.
Oh, yeah. Lots of stuff.
By the way, beautiful day.
It's gorgeous. I went and sat out in the seats for like 30 minutes, and it was just very nice.
Yeah, it is so nice. All right, we'll come back. More on the other side here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.